This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Keeping the Faith. I'm Don Nolan, the frequent substitute for Steve on this program. Steve is taking, along with his newly retired wife, a vacation for about 2 weeks, and will return second week of August. And we are here today to talk about the topic, the new atheists. Just for those of you who aren't acquainted with this now popular term in print media and mass media, the new atheist are the so-called popular new atheist, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, Christopher Hitchens. There are, of course, others, but those are the big four. As one Christian blogger put it, they're the four horsemen of the secular apocalypse. So we're here to talk about that topic, and our guests are Professor William Kegel, who is Professor of History and Religion at Millikan University. Welcome, Bill. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And Professor Bruce Suttle, who is a professor of philosophy at Parkland College. Thank you for coming, Bruce.
Yes, sir.
Before we get started, there is a sad announcement I wanted to mention to you that we just found out about. We're sad to report that the Reverend Don Mason died this last Thursday from a hiking accident. Don was the recently retired pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana. He was a noted ecumenist. He was a former president of the Illinois Conference of Churches and was heard most recently here on this program, Keeping the Faith, two or three weeks ago, July 12th. Listeners may hear his description of the volunteer work that he and his wife, Donna, were doing this summer at WILL.illinois.edu. For those of you who are interested in further information about services, you might want to contact the First Presbyterian Church of Urbana. Our condolences to his wife, Donna. All right. Once again, our topic is the new atheist, and I thought we might start our program off with a little flavoring. I came across something of a manifesto by a wide-eyed enthusiast of the new atheist, which gave this following appeal. I thought you all might enjoy it. Quote, "My friends, I must ask you an important question today. Where do you stand on God? It's a question you may prefer not to be asked, but I'm afraid I have no choice. We find ourselves this season 3.5 centuries after the intellectual martyrdom of Galileo, caught up in a struggle of ultimate importance, when each one of us must make a commitment. It is time to declare our position. This is the challenge posed by the new atheist. We are called upon, we lax agnostics, we non-committal non-believers, we vague deists who would be embarrassed to defend antique absurdities like the virgin birth or the notion that Mary rose into heaven without dying or any other blatant myth. We are called out, we fence-sitters, and hold to help exercise this debilitating curse, the curse of faith." I won't go on with the rest, but he concludes, "Three writers have sounded this clarion call to arms. They are Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett." Before I ask you all to respond to that, let me just remind our listeners this is a call-in show. The numbers are locally 333-9455. You can also call an 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Professor Kegel, does that manifesto stir you?
No, but let me just throw in something before we get involved in these intellectual atheists like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins. Most of the atheists that I've had contact with over the years, and I have been a professional counselor as well as a pastor, most of the atheists that I have had contact with are people who have been sexually abused as children. And I've counseled with dozens of them. They tell me that while they were being abused, they prayed desperately that God would end the abuse, and it continued. So they have told me that they cannot believe in a God who would allow that kind of thing to happen. So I think there's an amazing number, unfortunately, an amazing number of that kind of atheists in our country. When you stop to consider that one out of three American women is sexually abused by the time she reaches her 18th birthday, that causes a lot of crisis of belief.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, that's one of the main issues about atheism. How can people believe in a God who allows children to mm-hmm. be abused?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on and on. As far as Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, I think I've read most of their work. I find myself in agreement with about, I'd say...
Well, before we get started, could both of you just sort of indicate for the viewers, what books are we talking about for Richard Dawkins? Bruce?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Bruce.
Okay. the Richard Dawkins book is God Delusion. The Daniel Dennett book is Breaking the Spell. Sam Harris, two books. First was The End of Faith, and then subsequently that was followed by Letters to a Christian Nation. And Christopher Hitchens' book is God is Not Great.
Those are, of course, the most famous ones out there. There are others.
Yes, there are others, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. You were saying
about Dawkins. I think I've read all of Dawkins' book, and frankly, I find myself in agreement with about 96 or 97% of what he says.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with his conclusions. And I'm a little turned off by his attitude, and let me explain that if I can. I grew up in a fundamentalist church, graduated from a fundamentalist college, and then outgrew Christian fundamentalism, I hope. But a fundamentalist is a person who has the absolute truth and has a God-given obligation to impose that truth on other people. And I find a surprising parallel between that attitude of fundamentalists and Richard Dawkins. He believes he has the absolute truth, or at least that's the impression I get reading his work. And he's certainly on a crusade to impose his ideas on others. So I find that a bit off-putting. But my main objection with Dawkins is that he is strictly a scientist. If you cannot use scientific evidence to support something, then it's not real. My life's experience has told me that there are things beyond the material, beyond the reach of scientific evidence. So I disagree with his conclusions, but I'm really turned off by his attitude. I think he is probably overreacting to the Christianity that he grew up with, and I certainly had a problem of overreacting against fundamentalism for years, so I can understand that. So that's basically where I'm coming from.
It is possible to protest too much. Hurts of one's youth.
I think it can make you so angry and frustrated that you go to the other extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I would call Dawkins a fundamentalist atheist. He seems to me to have a closed mind. He has the truth, and he has nothing but ridicule for people who disagree with him. And I am turned off by that ridiculing of other people's belief system, frankly.
Before we turn to Professor Suttle, just a reminder, this is a call-in show. You can call in at 333-9455 if you have a question or comment to our guest on the topic, The New Atheist. You can also call in at 800 number, 1-800-222-9455. Bruce, I understand that your critique is not that far removed from Professor Kegel's.
Oh.
I disagree.
No.
Well, I was just going to refer to the point he made about scientific claims.
Well, that's where I have problems appreciating what you say. And so far as you say 98% agreement, and yet if his position and we'll have to get to whether it should be called atheism, but if his position of atheism is the product of the exclusive use of the scientific method, which I do agree with you, is inappropriate as the only method to determine the truth of anything, then I don't see how you would have 98% agreement. It would seem like the misuse or overuse of the empirical method should ill affect his conclusion and your evaluation of it. That at best it would be that hackneyed a position of I agree with his conclusion but disagree with his method of getting there. And it would seem to me that if a method method is faulty, then we ought to be suspect about the conclusion too.
I'm not saying the scientific method is faulty. Method is limited.
Yes.
I think I resonate pretty well with his critique of much of religion. However, to give you a specific example, he blames most of the wars in history on religion. I think that, to me, as a historian, is a very questionable reading of history. I think the wars of religion, quote-unquote, have been wars about power and control. Religion has only been the excuse and the rationale. And I think that includes also the 9/11 hijackers.
And I would counter that by saying throughout history, we've had sincere believers in God who have been quite critical of religion, that which is done in the name of God. Now, they have never had doubts about their belief in God. They have been very critical of religion. Now, if that's what he's up to, fine, then don't call yourself an atheist.
We have a caller from Urbana. Let's get our caller from Urbana in on the conversation. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment to our guest?
Well, I guess a question. I thought I heard something at the beginning of this program that, it's patently absurd. Did one of the speakers say that all of the atheists he's known were sexually abused as children?
I said
is that his contention?
I said most of the atheists, the non-believers in God that I've had contact over the years have been people who have been sexually abused. Almost all of them turn out not believing in God.
I know lots and lots and lots of atheists who are all intelligent and well-adjusted people who there would have to be a lot more sexual abuse going on as children than I believe is the case. And I know I was certainly not sexually abused as a child, and I am certainly an atheist. And I can't believe you lowered the level of the debate that much by that that absurd statement. I'm shocked that this is WILL.
I think you are misreading and misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm simply saying, in my experience, this has been true. However, I have a great deal of respect for people like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. As I said, I agree with 96% or 97% of what they say. I respect their intellect. I respect their scholarship.
I believe that they may have been sexually abused. As
no, that's what I'm not saying that at all.
So you shouldn't probably lead with that in your opening monologue.
To be fair, you said just the high percentage of those that you've dealt with in counseling
exactly.
situations. It's not all atheists, just the ones that you've encountered in a counseling.
All I'm saying is that many, many people in our society and our world have had very, very painful experiences in life that lead them to become atheists. That's very different from someone like you who is an intellectual atheist. I'm not putting everybody in the same basket at all. I'm just saying there are a heck of a lot more atheists out there than most of us realize, and much of it is based on very bad experiences in life. They cannot believe in a God who would allow that kind of thing to happen. But I was not demeaning atheists in any way whatever, and I'm sorry I came across that way. That was certainly not what I intended.
This seems to be a replay of I remember reading about that in April of 1966, the sole cover of Time magazine was three words, "Is God dead?" That was in 1966. And at that time, the two major atheists who were raising that question, Altizer and Hamilton, they were predicating their question on the results of what we heard came out of the concentration camps of the Second World War, of the Jewish experience of saying, how could there be a God who would allow his chosen people to suffer as we did. So that a particular approach of, you know, how can there be this type of misery in the world without God intervening, that's been around for a long time. And I hear again, it would seem to me that that raises some legitimate questions, but I don't know if it's sufficient to, shall we say, warrant calling someone an atheist if they have serious doubts about whether there can be an all-loving God while there is suffering in the world.
I had the same experience when my wife and I spent time in Israel in the 1960s. People were shocked that I would believe in God, and this came out in many, many conversations. And their response, these Israelis, was, how can you believe in a God who allows 6 million of my people to be slaughtered by the Nazis? Mm-hmm. The majority of Israelis in the 1960s were atheists, and I think they had darn good reason to be atheists. So that's what I was trying to indicate. I was not trying to read things into atheists who have arrived at that intellectually.
Well, speaking of intellectually, I find it interesting that since using the Time magazine article as a benchmark, 40-some years, and of all the textbooks that have been written about the problems of God, all the anthologies on atheism, all the discussions, I never read about Altheiser and Hamilton or that whole question in the 60s. And since these, quote, new atheists have been on the scene, and I read professional journals, and they're still dealing with the very hardcore questions about God's existence, and they never bring up Sam Harris's name or Dworkin or Bennett. These people are not dealing with the issue as it has been traditionally dealt with. They are, at best, critics of religion, and we could debate how justified their criticism is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very different issue than the issue of whether or not there is a God. And going back to my earlier point, I think if we talk about whether or not there is a God, then we can't say, and the only possible way to answer that question is the scientific empirical method. And if it doesn't satisfy that, then we have our answer. And that just stacking the deck from the very beginning.
Let me just remind our audience one more time. If you'd like to participate in this conversation, you can call in at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Let me read you, gentlemen, a quote from Dawkins and tell me what you think about it. Highly intelligent people are mostly atheists. Not a single member of either House or of Congress admits to being an atheist, so it just doesn't add up. Either they're stupid or they're lying, and they have – and have they got a motive for lying? Of course they've got a motive. Everybody knows that an atheist can't get elected. I guess my question on top of this is this onslaught by the so-called new atheists, which Bruce implicitly questions, more political than philosophical?
No, he's talking about hypocrisy. Yes, I think it is true that no atheist could be elected in the United States because of the way media treats politics. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to indicate from my experience as a counselor is that there are a whole lot more atheists in our country than we are willing to admit, mostly because of personal experience. But there's, I don't know how many intellectual atheists who have arrived at that position because of their scientific reasoning, because of their use of evidence, and it, you know, they're not hypocrites. They're trying to be honest intellectually. And this is one place where Dawkins kind of resonates with me. I think there is too much intellectual dishonesty in today's religions, all religions. I have been fighting that kind of hypocrisy all my life, trying to be intellectually honest and to have some integrity.
And Dawkins directly challenges the idea that you can be an intellectually honest religious believer.
Yeah, for him it's a black or white issue. Mm-hmm. Either you're an intellectual or you're a believer. You can't be both. And that's where I part company.
And I think on this point, I think to Dennett's credit, I find Dennett, of the four, perhaps more qualified to talk about the religious state of mind than the other three, because he reports that when he shared with a group of believers all the rational arguments disproving God's existence, and they very attentively listened, and when he was done, they agreed that the arguments were very good arguments, but then they added, but, quote, it's simply missing the whole point of religion. And I read that as we don't believe in God because of some rational or empirical argument. You're missing the whole point of religion. And if that's what you're going to, you know, deny God's existence on those terms, then you're talking about a God other than the God we believe in.
I think there is such a thing as experiential evidence.
Yes.
That's just as valid, or can be just as valid,
exactly,
as scientific evidence, and can be just as much misused and abused as scientific evidence.
Dennett once said, asked the question, would intelligent robots be religious? He said, perhaps they would, although if they were intelligent enough to evaluate their own programming, they would eventually question their belief in God. It doesn't necessarily entail that he believes that they would give up their belief in God, because there, as you're suggesting, Dennett also believes there's a, what's the term he uses, default position at some point in your experience, where it isn't reason that compels you, but something else.
I guess my response would be, how can you be genuinely religious and not question your belief in God?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You want to expand upon that a little bit?
There are 11 different definitions or understandings of faith in the Bible, 11 different ones. None of them means having the absolute truth. The most used definition of faith in the New Testament is faith as a relationship. And the relationship between Christians and God is compared to a marriage relationship. Well, I've been married for over 40 years. Does this mean I've never had doubts about whether I made the right decision marrying my wife? Of course not. Have I had doubts about whether God exists? Well, of course. I think any intelligent person who has integrity and honesty is going to have doubts and questions. I think it's part of being human. We don't have all the answers. The scientific method cannot provide all the answers. I can't use the scientific method to prove whether my wife loves me or not. That's based on experiential evidence. There's more to reality than what can be proven or disproven by the scientific method, in my experience.
And that is why I agree with that, and that's why I'm surprised that you still will say how much you agree with the...
The 99%.
Yeah.
Well, not 99%. I said 96%, 97%.
Okay.
But you get the message.
I think Bruce wants to get your percentage down a little
bit. Yeah, quite a little bit. Hitchens said once that, you know, anyone who believes something based on faith is believing something that is not very good, is not going to end up being credible.
We exercise faith every time we get on an airplane.
Of course we do. Of course. Well, not only that, but are these people, aren't the four new atheists all, quote, guilty, unquote, of having faith in the empirical scientific method? By definition, the empirical scientific method cannot prove itself.
Another example I use in teaching history, talking about the Great Depression, I raise the question, what is money? And it's amazing. Most students have no idea what money is.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, money is nothing but a blip on a computer. When our dollar bill says, in God we trust, I think there's a heck of a lot of truth in that. Our whole money system is based on faith. And, of course, we've had a real crisis of faith.
Yeah, right.
There is much in life that goes beyond evidence. We operate on faith all the time. Driving over here today on the interstate, I had faith that people would obey the traffic laws and not endanger my life.
And I agree, and it still leaves me with wonderment of your high percentage of endorsement.
Well, I'm imagining Dawkins the ghost of Dawkins. He's not a ghost yet, but imagining him here, he probably would bring up the flying spaghetti monster or Thor or Jupiter or whatever. And I think his position would be there's pretty good reason to doubt some claims to religious belief.
And
how,
my response,
how would you respond to him?
My response would be that every human description of God or every human understanding of God is by definition inadequate. If we could understand God, if we could understand ultimate reality, we would be God.
And I think Dawkins would say some are more inadequate than others. And
I agree.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Bruce, we have a caller from Champaign. You're on line one. Your question or comment?
Yeah, just a comment, maybe a question or so. Can you hear me okay first?
You're fine.
Okay. I'd like to just ask if the gentleman you're interviewing has read or heard of, I think Ignace Lepp, L-E-P-P, a French Jesuit who wrote a book, Atheism in Our Time, that was translated in the mid-60s. And he had been a communist and had converted to Catholicism, became a Jesuit. And he grouped different types of atheism, Nietzschean atheism, neurotic atheism, which I think, well, I'll leave that alone. And my second comment, my guess is there's far more abused born-again Christians who are in counseling than there are atheists, just as a comment. But, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Bruce, you want to respond first, although I think this is partially directed.
I'm familiar with Lepp, and he was part of a whole – he was in that same generation with Bishop Robinson and who were retreading Paul Tillich's notion of redefinition of God as a ground of all being and trying to depersonalize God. And it became at that time interesting on whether they should call it, they're talking about Christianity without God, meaning by that not the God, the Father with the white beard and big chain and all that, cane, but something more like what Tillich had in mind, ultimate concern, the ground of all being. And yes, so the caller was properly identified. One of the early people in that regard. As for the other comment, I'll turn that back to you about...
There's incredible variety of beliefs in religions, in Christianity in particular. And I think there's incredible variety among atheists. I don't think we should lump all atheists together. We shouldn't lump all Christians together. Our belief system, whether it comes across as a religion or philosophy, our belief system is an attempt to make sense of reality as we experience it, and we all have different experiences.
We have a couple other callers here, but just before we go to them, would it be fair to say, Bill, that you think that mental disorders are equally distributed among believers and non-believers, atheists and theists?
I think fundamentalism breeds mental illness.
Which entails that atheism doesn't breed more than its share compared to others?
Mentally healthy people are intellectually honest. They try to integrate their whole personality.
Just trying to get clarity here. We have a caller on line two from Urbana. Question or comment? Line two?
You started to get at my point earlier when you started talking about sort of different ideas of God, for example, Tillich's ground of being and that sort of thing. And so that's what makes me, very uneasy with this whole discussion. I mean, whether one believes in God, I mean, there is no universally understood definition of God. And I think it's almost a meaningless question. Do you believe in God? Well, what kind of God? Do you believe in a God that created the world in 7 days and that sort of thing? Well, no. And then go on from there. Do you believe maybe that it's the 3-year-old child who is the great philosopher of the? I mean, 3-year-old kids are really the great philosophers because any statement that you make, they can always ask why, and then you kind of come up with a reason, and they ask why again. So why? And there's no end to that. And the fact that there is no way of giving an ultimate why, an ultimate answer to the question why, that's, in a sense, that leaves some room for what some people might call God. I don't know.
Thank you for your comment. Bruce?
Well, I see the caller's point, but I don't think it's as serious as he suggests. I think that in most contexts, particularly in the West, when someone is asked, do you believe in God, what we mean is, you know, you believe in the God that is common to Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And if one wants clarification on that, we can always supply the clarification. And once we're clear on what we mean by the term God, then we can ask about whether what they one believes that it exists or doesn't. This applies to anything. You know, do you love your wife? Well, what do you mean by love? Some people mean one thing. Well, then if it's that important, then I'll clarify it. Then we'll answer the question. You know, what does it mean to be American? Now, is every American going to agree with necessary and sufficient conditions for being American? No, no. But we can still talk intelligently about it. My second point is, one of the things I find faulty with the New Atheist is that it's not clear on who their target is. If they are opposed to religions because of their concept of God, then does that mean that they are not critical of the atheistic religions? They're not critical of, say, Buddhism because Buddhism has no God? Or are they going to say, no, we're critical of Buddhism also because it's faith-based?
Well, Sam Harris does speak positively of Buddhism.
Right. But yet it will not satisfy Sam Harris's requirements for rational belief. It's not based on rational and empirical evidence. So it's they seem to be all over the place in terms of any target that's moving, they're going to fire at.
Bill, you want to respond to the questioner's comment about God?
I think, well, for me personally, let's put it that way. For me personally, religion is a lifelong search for truth and understanding. And I would define truth the way the Greek of the New Testament describes or defines truth. The Greek word that's translated truth in the New Testament also means reality. So truth is the same thing as reality. Truth is an accurate description of reality. I've spent my life trying to understand reality. I think that religion can be a tool toward understanding. I think science is a great tool for understanding. But I think that's a lifelong quest, and I don't think any of us ever arrive at absolute truth. It is beyond us. We will never comprehend reality. We get little bits and pieces of it. And that's why I enjoy reading books like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. They, too, have embarked on a search for truth. What turns me off, as I said, is I hear in them that they have arrived at it. Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody ever does.
Let's come back to that. We have a caller on line four who's been waiting patiently from Terre Haute. You're on line four. You have a question or comment?
I have a couple of questions and a couple of questions. Can your guest explain to me, the audience, what is the radical etymology of religion? And you have PhDs. And can you give the definition for the listeners with the etymology of psyche and psycho?
Just to be clear, you mean the words religion and psyche?
Yes.
Okay.
The origin of the word psyche is the Greek word for soul, as compared to soma, the Greek word for body. So that simply means the non-material part of human beings. But the Greeks were dualists, and I'm not a dualist. The Hebrew word for soul, nephesh, means the whole person. It's holistic. It's not Greek dualism. So today, psycho has been twisted to mean something sick. But psyche is simply the non-material part of a human being. And let me just give an illustration of what I'm talking about. I think science can help us understand a lot about brain function. But I think there is a difference between brain function and mind. And I don't think science can explain mind. It's different from the chemical reactions and the electrical impulses that make our brain function.
in this regard, you would disagree mightily with Daniel Dennett.
Yes.
He spent most of his life working on just the opposite.
Right.
Bruce?
No, I have nothing to add to this. I guess I would add that I'd ask Bill whether it would seem to me that what we have inherited in the West is the Platonic notion of the person, and the Christians certainly have Platonized, or you know, we can say that Christianity is you know, they've Christianized Plato,
largely thanks to Thomas Aquinas.
Thomas Aquinas, is it not the psyche that is supposed to be immortal? That ultimately is separable from the body upon death and lives on, that is your true self. And in that respect, we are dualistic. If you believe in any doctrine of immortality, we must believe in some type of dualism.
Well, yes and no. If you buy into that dualism, then yes, you're right. But the Hebrew concept is not about the immortality of the soul, which is imprisoned in a physical body that dies. So the Greeks talked about the mortal body and the immortal soul. The Hebrews talked about nephesh, the soul being the whole person, and they talked about a resurrection of the body. You have to have some kind of body to be a soul, a whole person. So the idea of immortality is Greek, the idea of a resurrection, that upon death we are given a new kind of body.
And you know that when one thinks of Judaism, their major doctrines, their doctrine on immortality certainly does not come first and foremost to mind. They are quite almost quiet about that topic compared to Christianity, which heralds that as almost the most important quality.
We just opened up an hour program, but we have three callers. We have a caller on line one. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith. Question or comment?
Hi, yeah. I'm calling to basically make the case for rationality. It's basically, I'm going to generalize somewhat by saying that it's common between Christian and Judaism and Muslim faiths that there's a deity that you can appeal to with prayer, which implies a sentient and some kind of interventionist being. And I think it's completely reasonable to say to someone who will have faith in that, well, what have you got to back that up? And that's a completely rational question. And I don't think it's unfair to ask that question. And I don't think it's saying that someone is only having faith in logic to say, well, when you say something, can you back it up? And I've never really heard anyone be able to back up an interventionist and sentient deity. So that's what I would make the case for. And, you know, have any of you been able to make that case?
Go ahead, Bill.
I think I'm just as much of a rationalist as you are, and I've always had problems with prayer, yes. I think prayer changes the believer. But again, I think there is a reality out there beyond the physical that we can and do relate to. And experiential evidence, I think, again, is valid. But yeah, I think I'm just as much of a rationalist as you are, and you're asking the right kinds of questions.
Bruce, on the topic of rationality, isn't it clear that rationality, according to the caller, leads you inexorably to logically conclude that some beliefs, I'm putting words into the mouth here of the caller, religious beliefs should be rejected on rational grounds?
Some beliefs, whether they're religious or not, ought to be rejected on rational grounds. The fact that they are religious does not in any way make them greater candidates for rejection than being non-religious.
And intelligent design counts as what kind of a claim?
Intelligent design? As you said, we had another program there on that.
Intelligent design is just another word substituted for creationism.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. And I'd want to have clarification. I don't know of anyone who would say that, you know, there is absolutely no evidence of any order or any pattern to reality, that it is totally and absolutely chaotic. I mean, they couldn't say that. It would be impossible to say that. So there is this pattern. There is intelligibility. We cannot just make anything on a whim intelligible. It must have certain qualities in and of itself in order for us to find it intelligible. So it's not a matter of either reality has some intelligence built into it or it's totally absurd. The matter is whether that intelligence that we find in reality is there because of some God agent or is there some other explanation? I think that's the important question.
Well, to be fair to the caller, very, very briefly, we got three more calls. He was suggesting that aren't there rational grounds, good reasons to reject religious claims?
Of course.
And I had said so. Yeah.
All right. We have another caller, I believe, on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. You're from Champaign, I believe.
Oh, hello?
Yes.
Line one? Okay.
Question or comment for our guest?
All right. I've never believed that God speaks to me, but I think some kind of creator has created energy in us, so therefore we have this kind of energy that came from some kind of power, and that all people need love, and it seems to be effective. That seems to be real. And that we help each other with this energy, and some of these things prove to be of real value, these types of interactions and solving of problems and healing of people.
And you have a question?
You just wanted
to make that comment.
So I just don't think that it's irrational to believe that. I think that's pretty good, one explanation.
Well, thank you very much.
My reaction would be E equals MC squared. If you think of God as the ultimate source of all energy, part of that energy became the material world, well, I don't see any conflict.
We have another caller on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith, and I believe you are from Eureka, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. When I was in college, I was involved with several evangelical student movements. And I once heard a man by the name of Josh McDowell, who was a speaker for Campus Crusade, and then I read John Warwick Montgomery, who used to teach at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield. And I wonder, let me preface this, both of these speakers were graduate trained in theology, and they would go around speaking quite often to campus atheists and make quite strong defenses for Orthodox Christianity. Have you ever heard of any one of these speakers? Or read any of them?
Bill?
Okay, thank you very much.
Bruce? Well,
I certainly remember Josh coming to U of I quite frequently at the Quad, and I found him to be more of, I don't want to say entertaining, but he would certainly bait people, and the audience would bait back, and it was more of a contest. As for his theological training, he showed no evidence of theological training. It showed him having command of the Bible and being able to recite verse upon demand. But it seemed like the whole context in which the exchange occurred, it was a series of one-liners, and it was not a serious debate. But Josh was quite a presence at the University of Illinois for at least 10 years or so, I remember.
We have another caller on line three, I believe, Champaign County. Your question or comment?
I have a sort of a redirection. The conversation has shifted from the idea of new atheism to sort of this idea of belief and Christian belief. Getting back to the original ideas of these authors that were supposed to be part of the program or discussed in the program, what's new about atheism in their work?
Modern science, astrophysics, the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I would also add, particularly with Harris, since he was, in a sense, the first of the four, his involvement, his work with neuroscience, working with MRIs and talking, finding out what researchers are offering as evidence when people talk about their beliefs, and some people have used this evidence from neurology and science to say that
Daniel Dennett.
That this shows that the God concept is strictly man-made, and then they make a gigantic leap from, since it is a man-made concept, therefore there is no God. And people are buying that, it seems to me. I mean, people who are in the market for it are buying it, that merely establishing that a concept is man-made, that proves that there is no reference outside of us. And that's what's new. That was never before around. Otherwise, I would say it's back to retreading of finding the faults with religions that are pretty well known and debating about whether they've done more harm than good.
Roots are in David Hume.
Yeah.
We have a caller on line four, I think, from Peoria. Is that right?
Yeah.
Question or comment?
Yeah. I am an atheist, and I think that religion perhaps started with worship of the sun, and it ties into our desire or our love or our enjoyment of telling stories, our imagination, finding explanations or answers. But so much of religious talk is about you are the light of the world and the halo, and that's, of course, a sun symbol. But there's something very deep in the human psyche, again, about telling stories and making up things or whatever. And so I'll just throw that out as a, something for you to talk about. Hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you for your comment.
Most of those stories, as I have indicated, were people trying to understand the reality they were experiencing. Well, I think this is the quest of religion and science, to understand reality. Those old stories no longer provide adequate explanations, if they ever did. I think most of them were symbolic anyway rather than given as real answers, but I didn't live back then, so I don't know for sure. But, yeah, the truth of life is related through stories, traditionally.
There's a saying that I think applies across all the disciplines, and that is that first there were the storytellers, regardless what discipline it was.
Right.
First you have the storytellers. And then you start getting technical and all that. But you start off with stories.
Yes.
Yes.
Before we get to the last part of our program, we have just about a little over 10 minutes left. Let me just remind our listeners that next week, August 2nd, our topic for Keeping the Faith will be International Friends, which is a local organization focused on acclimating. Our next program is University YMCA with the 125th anniversary, which is Rachel Dekus and Gia Lewis. And also would want to point out that support for Keeping the Faith has been provided in part from listeners like you who contribute to WLL and from the Friends Meeting on East Main in Urbana and from the University YMCA in Champaign. The YMCA's dump and run sale, if you are acquainted with it, will be collections will be taken place at the Stock Pavilion on August 19th. Well, as we get to the last few minutes of our program, we do have a caller on line one. I'm sorry. Hello, you're on Keeping the Faith from Champaign, I believe. You have a comment or question?
I do. My question is, don't we all ask why at various points in our lives, whatever we call ourselves religiously or non-religiously, because that's part of the human condition? I mean, doesn't one of the Psalms say, why do the wicked prosper? I think we all wonder.
Bill?
I think you're absolutely right. We all wonder. And we all have questions. And what the answer that satisfies those questions at one stage in our life doesn't satisfy it in another stage, so we ask the same question at a deeper level. I agree with you. That's the human experience. And I think we ought to encourage the dialogue so that we can share our different perceptions of those answers and learn from each other.
Thank you.
Bill, hey, Bruce?
I think that even though that's accurate, we all ask why. I think it might be misleading insofar as, and this is part of my criticism or discomfort with taking someone like Paul Tillich too literally. He says that one way of understanding God is that which is that which we give ultimate concern to, or that which that has ultimate concern. Well, I think he strikes a point that we all resonate with, except my problem is that if it applies to all of us, then we all have our own fashion, our own stylistic, our own customized notion of God, because we all have an ultimate concern. I need now then a term for someone who says, I don't have any God at all. It makes it sound like, by definition then, it's impossible to be a non-believer, because if you have an ultimate concern, then you believe in God. It's just a different customized version. And that's why I agree we all ask why, but I don't think that makes us all religious.
Right. But the scientific method cannot answer the question as to the purpose of human life or why we have a universe. That's beyond science, and that's what religion struggles with, and it may be beyond religious answers too. There are a lot of things we just don't know. We are limited human beings.
And I would say, as long as we say we don't know, we have a nice word for that. It's called agnosticism. We don't know. I think at best that these new atheists, they can rest their case on being agnostic. But to call themselves atheists based upon they don't like what religions have been doing to people, therefore God doesn't exist, seems to be a gigantic leap that's unjustifiable.
And just to clarify, I know you well enough, Bruce, to know you're not coming at that comment from a theistic perspective yourself.
No.
Right. Bill?
And I would say that there's 11 different understandings of faith in the Bible, but faith – to me, is very close to agnosticism. I would put it on a spectrum with a fanatic at one end of the spectrum. Think of a magnetic field. Put a fanatic at one end of the spectrum, an atheist at the other end. And in between, you have on one side an agnostic who says you can't know for sure, so forget the whole thing. And on just the other side of that line, a person of faith who says, no, you can't know for sure, but for reasons that I may not be able to explain, I believe. And I think most of us flip-flop back and forth between that line of agnosticism and faith.
Before we get to our next caller, I just want to point out Daniel Dennett does seem to move somewhat in that direction. He does mention the Socratic response to religious claims near the end of his book, Breaking the Spell. We have a caller on line 4. You have a comment or question?
Yes. I had one more question earlier. Have your guests heard of the science which is called pneumatology?
Well, I haven't.
It's new to me.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll tell you. It is the science of communicating with those in spirit who no longer have a physical body. And I, as a spiritualist minister, have had many, many accounts of communications from beings without body.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. We've got just a few minutes left here. Let me just focus on a question that's been of interest to me, and I'm sure Professor Kegel, your teaching of history, you remember Robespierre's attempt to establish a religion based on reason.
Yes.
In the French Revolution.
Or Thomas Jefferson. Right. Yeah.
I sometimes think that Sam Harris is attempting to resurrect a church of reason shorn of, to use a term 20, 25 years ago, demythologized, if you will. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, as I said, I'm pretty much of a rationalist.
Let me read you his Sam Harris's comments. This is from Letter to a Christian Nation. There would be a religion of reason in answering the question, what would religion be without God? There would be a religion of reason. We would have realized the rational means to maximize human happiness. We may all agree that we want to have a Sabbath that we take really seriously, a lot more seriously than most religious people take it, but it would be a rational decision. and it would not be just because it's in the Bible. We would be able to invoke the power of poetry and ritual and silent contemplation and all the variables of happiness so that we could exploit them. Call it prayer, but we would have prayer without, and I'll just leave expletive deleted.
Rational people disagree with each other. We have differing perceptions of reality. We have different perceptions of what is rational.
Then my question is, do you and Sam Harris really disagree, given these words of his?
I am much more cynical about human reason than he is, I think.
Mm-hmm. So he definitely couldn't be a Presbyterian.
Who knows? Presbyterianism is pretty wide open.
He and Calvin would not get along in a stuck elevator, given his...
Calvin lived in a different era.
Right.
Yeah.
I also think that Daniel Dennett, who, as I understand it, goes to a church.
Mm-hmm. He goes, yes.
One of the
I know that,
four
I know
that,
the particular
that
church he goes to in Blue Hill, Maine.
Yeah. Have you been there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So, obviously, Dennett is convinced that there's more to religion than what Sam Harris or Dawkins believe. Is that, would you say that Dennett's mind is a little bit larger in his ability to comprehend the phenomena of religion?
Take refuge in my answer by repeating what I said before. He seems to appreciate that people are not religious for rational reasons. And it could very well apply to also to himself, that he does not go to church, you know, for some logical, syllogistic set of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it would be, but he certainly is acknowledging that there are a multitude of people who find something else in religion other than rationality to keep them interested.
And it sounds to me like Dennett could be a member of your church, given the Professor Kegel, given the description of your own commitment.
Well, I'm not a pastor of a church anymore, but I hope he would feel very comfortable in my religion classes, yes.
Uh-huh. Well, it seems to me that they at least Dennett has a inkling that there's more here. And you said in response to the very good question earlier, what's new about the new atheist? And you mentioned the Sam Harris's background. And Dennett also has spent a great deal of time focusing upon philosophy of mind and the nature of consciousness, and Dawkins wrote The Selfish Gene, I believe is the title, and spoke of memes. He's taken a lot of flack on that in his great debate with Stephen Gould. My sense about The New Atheist is that it's as much political as it is anything else. So I think, isn't it fair to say that they are recoiling against political issues. And I should sorry, I'm going to have to stop at this point. Our time sneaked up on us. I want to thank Professor Kegel and Professor Bruce Suttle for joining us on Keeping the Faith. Appreciate it. Had a good conversation. See you again next week.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.